It's just so hard to wrap your arms around the fact that your child would do heroin.
She told me that day in the hospital, I'm not done using. And I was like, oh, hell yeah, you are.
It's not that OxyContin is particularly powerful. It's that pain is particularly confounding.
Every muscle and bone in your body hurts.
It's so important for the mental health and substance abuse issues to be treated together.
As the opioid epidemic continues to ravage the country, it's important to keep in mind who is affected by addiction. It could be the chef at the restaurant down the street, your family doctor, or even a colleague sitting right next to you. According to a 2017 survey from the National Safety Council, roughly 70% of employers reported that their businesses had been affected by prescription drug abuse. And this includes missing work, positive drug tests, accidents, and sometimes even overdoses. The same survey also found that fewer than one in five companies felt extremely well prepared to combat the opioid crisis, a low number for such a big problem. So what happens to workers who are experiencing an opioid addiction? Jenny Gold is here, and she's a senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News. And her latest story for the New York Times explores opioid addictions in the workplace. Jenny, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
So Jenny, in your piece, you profile Jimmy Sullivan. Who's Jimmy?
Jimmy is a construction worker in Portland, Oregon. He actually is a bricklayer, so they lay the brick that you might see on the outside of a building. It's a really manual labor job, very difficult, backbreaking work. And he became addicted to drugs quite a long time ago, originally crystal meth, but it evolved into heroin as the opioid epidemic really took over the country. And he continue to work as a construction worker throughout all of his addiction. And it got so bad that at one point in a single 6-month period, he overdosed 3 times on a job site. 3 times, which is quite a lot. He recovered each of those times, went back to work, and it was after that 3rd time that his boss finally did fire him.
And so, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics, at least 217 workers died from drug and alcohol overdoses in 2016. But do we know or do we have any information on people like Jimmy who have overdosed but survived? Do we have any idea about the percentages?
We really don't. That 217 number, you know, it seems pretty low. It's increasing dramatically. It's up 32% from the year before and 25% every year since 2010. But those are just the fatalities. Often people recover, like Jimmy, who had 3 of these. We actually have no idea. What we know is sort of just the tip of the iceberg. We also don't know the number of accidents or safety issues that are caused by opioid use.
Also wondering, like, there are certain jobs that drug test and there are certain jobs that don't. Has drug testing come up at all in your reporting as a way to either mitigate this or to just penalize people who have drug issues right now?
Well, we do know from the National Safety Council survey that of the businesses they talk to, about half drug tested. But of that half, 40% aren't even testing for synthetic opioids like hydrocodone or fentanyl or, you know, most of the opioids that you sort of hear discussed in the news. So, you know, it's not like they're all doing it. Jimmy Sullivan, for example, he's in an industry where you would think there'd be a lot of drug testing, yet he was never asked to take a drug test. It's not so easy. It's possible to fake a drug test. I've talked to a couple people who had done that as well, a couple workers. You know, even if you get a positive result, and what does the company do? Some have a policy that's an automatic firing offense. But a lot of companies really need the workers that work for them. They're very valued employees or skilled workers. So one thing I tried to look at in my story was, you know, what were employers doing to, A, prevent opioid addiction, but B, deal with it if they find it or they identify it among their workers. And what I discovered was not a lot. You know, there's a lot they could be doing. They could certainly be doing a better job identifying it, and they could certainly be doing a better job offering treatment and guidance and trying to help their workers into recovery. But what I found was most of them are really turning a blind eye at this point.
I'm wondering if that's because it's expensive, number one. If you tell somebody, you know, to take a month off, for example, to do an inpatient treatment program, that the company loses the worker, and it also the insurance company or the person needing the help will have to pay for some of that. Does cost come into this? And also, is it really only focused on opioid users, or are we looking at other types of drug abuse, drug and alcohol abuse?
So, you know, opioids are the hot topic of the day. Lots of people do have an opioid addiction. It's a huge problem. It's a huge contributor to the 72,000 overdose deaths in 2017. But yes, you make an excellent point. We're not just talking about opioid use disorders. There's, you know, substance use is a problem across the board. Alcohol remains the greatest addictive substance. So that's a really good point to remember. In terms of cost, yes, it is expensive to offer treatment. However, employers are already spending a tremendous amount of money on the opioid epidemic. They just probably aren't identifying it. There was a Peterson Kaiser project that looked at how much employers were spending on opioid abuse, overdoses, and treatment. What they found was that $2.6 billion were spent by large employers in 2016. That was a ninefold increase of what they were spending 12 years earlier. So they're already paying for the crisis. Employers often are the ones who are providing health insurance, which means that if anyone gets those opioids or needs medical treatment having to do with them, that they're paying for it anyways.
What about the workers themselves? I mean, I'm sure there's a fear of being penalized. You know, addiction isn't just a one-sided issue, as I'm sure you know. There's all other sorts of issues with shame and fear. Does that play into workers not wanting to be more transparent about their drug and alcohol use with their own employers?
Absolutely. I think it would be very difficult to be transparent with your employers about your opioid use disorder or any substance use disorder. I think these are often situations where the employer is discovering it through other means. Maybe it's an obvious thing, like the worker is nodding off on the job. Maybe less obvious, they're coming in late frequently, they're missing a lot of work. There can be other signs and symptoms. And there's, you know, employers could be training managers to sort of spot and identify those things. But absolutely, there's also a hairy sort of legal issue here and a privacy issue for workers.
Which is one thing I was wondering, if does the worker's privacy then get violated if they say something to their employer and then the employer can open up an HR complaint? It just seems like it's really fraught.
It is a very fraught issue. But ultimately, you know, there are some groups that are doing more. What I found was that unions were really being much more forward-thinking about dealing with opioid use among their workers.
An important topic for sure. Jenny Gold is a senior correspondent for Kaiser Health News. Jenny, thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.